I'm Roman Mars from 99% Invisible, and you're listening to BFF.FM.
This is Mac DeMarco. Thank you so much.
I'm Forrest Guest, station engineer, and you're listening to BFF.FM. Oh, the cable's fucked up.
In every dream home, a heartache, and every step I take takes me further from heaven. Is there a heaven? I'd like to think so. Standards of living, they're rising daily, but home, oh sweet home, it's only a saying. From bell push to faucet, in smart town apartment, the cottage is pretty, the main house a palace, penthouse perfection. But what goes on? What to do there? Better pray there. Open plan living, bungalow ranch style, all of its comforts seem so essential. I bought you mail order, my plain wrapper baby. Your skin is like vinyl, the perfect companion. You float in my new pool, deluxe and delightful, inflatable doll. My role is to serve you, disposable darling. Can't throw you away now, immortal and life-size. My breath is inside you, I'll dress you up daily and keep you till death-size. Inflatable doll, lover ungrateful, I blew up your body, but you blew my mind.
Listening to TV on the radio here on BFF.FM. I'm Jessica, and I'm here with Leah. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning.
It's September 1st. It's BFF's birthday.
Yay!
Yay! Happy birthday, BFF.FM. You're a big 6 years old now. Oh,
so grown up. Yeah. Lost its first teeth, yeah. Everything.
maybe making your own peanut butter and jelly sandwiches by now. I don't know. I don't know if you're one of those kids, BFF, that makes your own lunch at six, or mommy still does it for you.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with this metaphor, so let's just move on. Yay, BFF. Today we are in less joyous subject matter, talking about the long-awaited, well, for me, I waited a long time. I don't know if anyone else cared. Season two of Mindhunter.
Yes.
A Netflix show that follows the FBI as they develop their behavioral science unit.
Yeah.
Talk to a bunch of crazy guys.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like the second season, Leah?
I did. I really, really, really liked the first season. Mm-hmm. I felt like kind of like this, I don't know, I think it did a good job at like making you feel the excitement of this like burgeoning project. And then the second season, the unit's more established. They're like, mm-hmm. the FBI is putting more resources into it.
They're trying to implement their, what they've learned as like just protocol.
Yeah, protocol. And they're trying to, like, the goal is for them to be like the first call, like not just a data study after the fact, like for them to get involved in actual active cases, mm-hmm. to come up with profiling, which of course makes sense, and that's how they do it nowadays. But I feel like the show is really, really, like, it's beautifully shot, mm-hmm. it's very atmospheric, mm-hmm. it's got like, it's got all these like very compelling, there's like a high stakes investigation, like it's got, mm-hmm. these very, very compelling elements, and like a lot of David Fincher material, it also seems soulless in a way that I didn't mind as much in season one and didn't really relate to.
The first season was from 2 years ago, so it's been quite a while. Yeah, 2017. Huh. I had forgotten how stylized it is. Mm-hmm. It took me a little bit to warm up to the second season. Mm-hmm. The dialogue, it's a very talky show.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to get back into it because it's not like naturalistic acting. Mm-hmm. It's not the typical show that I'm drawn to.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to, I think both of us like shows that are very touchy-feely. And
yeah.
really like fall yeah. in love with some of the characters. Mm-hmm. And this is not that show. But I definitely got into it. I felt, this season, as you said, that we see them like trying to turn what they've learned about serial killers into like a protocol to, mm-hmm. to try to come up with a profile based on evidence in an active investigation. And I think that was interesting. I think it was sort of an indictment of criminal profiling in way, because mm-hmm. it doesn't actually work in the way they think it does.
Yeah.
They're trying to take this, you know, technology, for lack of a better word, and turn it into standard practice. And it turns out it's really inaccurate, and criminal profiling's not a science.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, like the cops we see on TV and crime dramas like Sherlock Holmes, and I always think of Bobby Gorin because he's like a computer. He's always right. He's infallible.
Yeah.
His knowledge is like a supercomputer, and he is, you know, always ends up being right by pulling something out of what seems like thin air.
Intuition.
Yes.
Cops' intuition.
But, you know, what he's doing is criminal profiling, mm-hmm. and in reality, it's not that accurate. And in Mindhunter, it's not that accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers for the second season. They are trying to use what they've learned to solve the Atlanta child murders, which mm-hmm. Had you heard of this until Mindhunter? This
case yeah,
from like
I
1980,
had.
1980.
Yeah, I have.
I never had, but like 28 black children mm-hmm. went missing, and many of them turned up murdered in Atlanta through 79 to 81,
yeah.
I think. And it turns out they nabbed someone for it. The show ends with them mm-hmm. arresting Wayne Williams, I think his name was.
Yes.
It's always a Wayne.
Always.
You got to watch out. Anyone named Wayne, sometimes they have frequently tried to bury it in their middle name.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Real red flag.
Give a wide berth.
Mm-hmm.
but it ends up that this guy was charged with two murders. Yes. Two of the adults who were killed, none of the children. But they ended up, because they arrested a suspect, they ended up closing the cases. So mm-hmm. truly, this went unresolved. And the show makes it seem like their profiling didn't work. It didn't mm-hmm. probably didn't get them their man. And I just thought that that was interesting. And I actually found, maybe this is a case of me seeing what I want to see, much like our hero Holden Ford frequently does. I thought maybe it was kind of a statement about like technology in general, especially in 2019. I feel mm-hmm. like there's an attitude of if just you can solve any problem by throwing more and more money and resources at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens in the show. They take this tool. There's a new head of their unit in the FBI who tells them, like, we want to grow this rapidly. So mm-hmm. we're going to throw money at it. We're going to put more agents on it. And they just treat it like it's this machine you can scale upward. And it's not. They're working with a flawed technology and trying to expand it or perfect it by just making it bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how it works. And it ends up that they, you know, can maybe identify who they think is a suspect through this profiling. And it's to their detriment because they're ignoring other possibilities. This season, largely, Holden was focused on the fact that the suspect had to be black because serial killers in his research never crossed racial lines mm-hmm. and all the victims were black, so the suspect had to be black. And throughout the season you kind of see his resolve doesn't really crack, but other people are starting to doubt that
yeah,
because, you know, this is in Atlanta, the Klan is a presence mm-hmm. like why a lot of people thought it was probably a hate crime by a white supremacist, but Holden, you know, ignored that completely.
Would not even entertain that possibility.
Anyway, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
It's sort of fun, not fun, sort of a fun and kicky.
Just a cute little romp through the Atlanta child murders.
But
yeah.
I just mean, like, it takes the, takes the format of, like, kind of the kind of crime dramas we watch today.
Yeah.
And yet it's about how the police aren't always right, like they are on, you know, CBS.
I think, so when I was saying that it feels soulless, I think it is kind of what you said, like, you're not given the opportunity to fall in love with the characters. It's not mm-hmm. about that. It yeah. is like procedural in a way that's yeah. different than other shows. And I think this season, because it was focused so much on the Atlanta child murders, which were heinous, horrendous crimes, mm-hmm. obviously, I just like the dichotomy of this very analytical look at this, like, extremely emotional, like mm-hmm. terribly devastating for an entire city, you know, string of murders, feels like that dichotomy is really, really hard for me to square. And yeah. I thoroughly enjoy the show. I don't think that's an indictment of it. I think that's what mm-hmm. David Fincher is setting out to do. It's supposed to be like a very removed analytical kind of look at the formation of this group
mm-hmm.
and but there's something about it that feels cold in again, I think intentionally, and for me, like, where I'm at in my life, I'm like, ugh, really, like, right. as we just keep racking up the number of bodies and mm-hmm. it's just very like, yeah, you see the fallacy of like people just getting tied into like whatever narrative they want to put right. forward. The whole thing has a real Carcosa vibe to it mm-hmm. that again is very effective, but I was just like, oh god, should I just switch to that Christina Milian movie about winning an inn in New Zealand? Like, I just take a moment and watch that instead?
Have you watched that?
Not yet, but I will.
That's gonna be our palate cleanser.
11:27 a.m. I'm thinking Christina Milian and I have a date.
But I think that's a good point, because this show is about, you know, trying to get inside the human mind.
Mm-hmm.
And but they are all the cops and FBI are trying to, they're looking at human behavior as though it is a set of data points that you can plot and figure out and predict what the next thing is going to be. But the fact is, these are, you know, even the serial killers are humans we're dealing with, and it's not, you can't predict them through some sort of mathematical formula.
Yeah.
And yeah, the show does, it's taking human behavior and looking at it through this like filter of inhumanity.
Yeah. And I do think it is an indictment of criminal profiling also. Mm-hmm. I think you see that in the intergroup conflict that occurs. Mm-hmm. Like, some of the scenes that I enjoyed most were the, so there's Holden, whatever,
Holden Caulfield. Ford.
Holden Ford. <Model T. laughs> Yeah. Holden Ford, played by Jonathan Groff.
Mm-hmm.
Love Jonathan Groff.
So good.
So good.
He does, a lot of the acting in this show is just people's, the very minor changes in their facial expressions.
Yeah.
And he does such a good job of like just kind of staring wide-eyed and like mild horror at everything.
He does something really interesting with that character. Holden Ford is an asshole the way he's written,
Yeah, like he's terrible. He is
completely cocksure, like goes off on, it starts with this new director, Director Gunn, basically telling Bill Tench, his partner, his like older seasoned partner, and Anna Torv, who plays Wendy, the scientist who they brought on board, that they have to act as his blinders because he's kind of like this rogue agent. But then it's so interesting because Gunn, the director, is like, his instincts, though, like, you've got a horse with these instincts. And it's also like about five episodes in, I think it was episode seven, where he's like, well, we as the experts need to put this forward. And I'm like, you're 1 year into this thing that you developed. And like, it's just, it's so, there's an interesting plot line about the difference. Like, Wendy gets shunted to essentially like doing the grunt work. Like, she's this.
Yeah, it was her trajectory was interesting this season.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what to make of it.
Oh, I think it's completely intentional, but it's also, it's, there's this like interesting dichotomy. Like, she is truly an expert, like a scientist who has studied and like is, you know, was involved in this in, you know, for the scientific, like, analytical data, and to be kind of like the funnel directing them to people they should interview who, you know, and analyzing the psychology of these people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you never once hear her proclaim that she's like an expert at this, and she is significantly more qualified than fucking Holden Ford 2 years out of, you know, Quantico or whatever.
There's an interesting story where the new director told them that he could get them Manson, meaning they could interview Charles Manson, and Holden's so excited about this because that is the shiny like the biggest, most well-known, high profile murder case. And Wendy's like, Manson didn't kill anyone. Like, he doesn't, he's not the kind of person we're looking for.
Yeah.
But everyone else is just, you know, enamored of this idea.
Manson.
It's so exciting.
Yeah.
And that's like, of course. Like, I was reading some stuff about criminal profiling and how, you know, inaccurate it is. And some article I read pointed out that, you know, the data that the FBI has is drawn from a self-selecting group of people who were willing to be interviewed.
Yeah.
And so it tended to be male, white men of a certain age range who, you know, were interested in
the notoriety.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In holding forth about what they did. So, I mean, that I don't know, maybe that those are the only people who end up being serial killers, but that's not necessarily
That's clearly
true.
Not the case, though. I mean, there are serial killers that have never been caught because they're not interested in
and
that.
And in an episode, while they're waiting around to interview Charles Manson, they get to have another chat with Ed Kemper, and he says as much, like, you're getting all your, you're gleaning all your data from people who got caught.
Yeah.
You know, they're, Holden's also very interested in only talking to smart people. He resents all the stupid people they interview.
Yeah.
But maybe Ed Kemper has a point there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And that's Mindhunter, folks.
It's, I mean, I enjoyed it. I really got into it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I just, like I said, I feel like, yeah, I absolutely enjoyed it and recommend it. I think that there's a lot to recommend it. And I don't know. I'm just season, not in the,
if you felt like the first bleak. Season was too like talky and procedural and cerebral, this season was too, but also because they try to use what they've learned in an active case, mm-hmm. it does turn into more of like a standard crime drama.
Stakes procedural. Are higher. Yeah.
The stakes are really high. And God, it was harrowing.
It really was.
It covered a few months, I guess, but like, yeah, the way these murders are piling up is just horrific.
Yeah, and it does feel very, very, like, given the state of the world now, it's just, it was really bleak for me to be like, it's always been like this, and we've just been mm-hmm. able to, like, yeah, the Atlanta child murders weren't widely reported because, you know, they didn't want to cause a panic, but also if it was 29 white children, it would have been extremely widely
reported.
Yeah,
that was an interesting layer too. A lot of the storyline was political because we see Atlanta is in the middle of this like redevelopment mm-hmm. project where they're trying to turn it into like the next big
metropolis,
urban center in America. So the authorities and the mayor both like they want the help from the FBI, but they do not want the publicity mm-hmm. of a serial killer. They're trying to make this the next big city. So yeah, part of it is this like, and so the mayor is black. He's mm-hmm. and they are also they don't want to publicize that they're searching for a black suspect mm-hmm. because that's not a good look for a mayor whose constituency is largely black and it seems racist, and it kind of is. That was interesting.
What do you think about Wayne Williams? Do you think he did commit all those murders?
I haven't read extensively about Wayne Williams or the case. It seems so I don't know how much, if anything, was fictionalized for the show, but it is true that he was only convicted of the two mm-hmm. adult murders.
He has always maintained his innocence about the child murders.
To this day, he's still alive. And
in 2019, they reopened the case.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They reopened four of the cases that they're re-examining.
I think if it's true that law enforcement was really just focused on a black suspect to the exclusion of other possibilities, that could have been a huge miss. I think it's pretty compelling. This is about the adult victims, but one of the adult victims was quite a large man. Wayne Williams is a diminutive 5'7" mm-hmm. guy. The idea that you could strangle someone to death who's much larger than you seems suspicious. It seems like this is a guy who's maybe not capable of that many murders, but I don't know. What do I know? Like I said, most of what I know is from the TV show. And
I mean, the compelling thing is that everything stopped after Wayne Williams was convicted. But there were a lot of stories about, apparently there's a tape of a KKK member talking about how they like committed this genocide. This genocide of but there was physical evidence found on some of the children's bodies that matched carpet fibers in his house and his German Shepherd and all of that. But I don't know that he committed them all. I think maybe some of them, they also, you know, they did say that there were 8 to 10 child homicides in Atlanta at that time. So maybe, I don't know, you can take 10 of them off the table for him.
You mean
for
like
him.
On average?
On average, yeah. So I don't know. So I don't know that I think he probably did.
Yeah, I mean,
My thing with the KKK angle is I don't know enough about the KKK to be informed on this, but let me give you my opinion anyway. I just feel that if this was a targeted hate crimes by the KKK, I think that I don't know that they're disciplined enough to stop when a black man is convicted. I don't know that that's, why not keep going and try to get more black men convicted for it? I don't know. But anyway, America's garbage, you guys, is the upshot. America's really garbage.
Yeah, the other
garbage.
Fun side effect of, so we, they interview more serial killers, mm-hmm. imprisoned serial killers. And not everyone, but I went down some rabbit holes of just reading really grim Wikipedia articles. I'd never heard of Dean Corll, the Candyman
I hadn't
murderer.
Either, the Texas guy.
How like everyone, I presume, has heard of John Wayne Gacy. Like, I've always known who John Wayne Gacy is.
Sure.
Maybe it's because he's a particularly colorful character, but I don't know how I know who that is, but I don't know who Dean Corll is, who killed 28 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also 28 young men.
Yeah.
You know, like, and had two teenage accomplices who, in Mindhunter, the character we see is one of his accomplices who ended up murdering Dean Corll.
In self-defense.
Yeah.
That was his story. And that was his story. I kind of believe him.
Yeah. Who fucking knows?
Like, also, who cares? You, like, by Dean Corll.
Yeah. How do you even, like, draw logical conclusions from a story where a man, like, groomed two, like, 13-year-old boys to help him murder a bunch of other mm-hmm. people? It's like, I don't know where, like, where logic starts and stops.
I don't know, but we, in 2019, just dispatched Jeffrey fucking Epstein, so, you know, I don't know. He groomed his victims to get him other victims, too, so.
I mean, I believe it can happen. I just don't understand, like, how you make sense of any, like, how do you answer any questions within that story about what anyone was up to?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's all real bleak. Real bleak, guys. But that's not to say that the show is, like, not without humor. And
oh my
I think
God,
that
it's so funny.
I was saying earlier, that's one of the things that Jonathan Groff does in a very effective way. Like, Jonathan Groff is a Broadway actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's acted in TV shows before. He was in Closer, Closing, whatever. What's the Looking?
Looking.
Looking. Whatever that San Francisco show was that I watched two episodes of. Yeah, he was in Looking. He's acted in things before. You know, he's the voice of Kristoff, as we all know, anyone with kids. But he makes this, like, completely, like, strangely sociopathic guy seem also, like, insanely kind of naive and innocent. Like, they were talking about that Candyman case, and then he's like, why would anyone get in a car for, like, two, you know, Snickers or whatever? And then they're like, no, it was drugs and, like, cigarettes. Oh. it wasn't the actual candy, you know. But he just, like, again, like, refers to himself as an expert and feels completely he gives that super awkward speech to the, like, outgoing director. Mm-hmm. Like, just again, give me the confidence of a mediocre white man.
Right.
And he plays it in a way that still has a real, like, vulnerability to it. And I think it's really, really interesting. But he brings a lot of the moments of humor in his kind of, like, guileless.
Yes.
Doesn't know. Like, he's so sure about everything, but he does not know how to actually do anything in the real world.
Yeah.
Like, he's good with, like, analytical stuff.
Yeah, he's the type of guy who would hide behind, like, numbers and
his tape recorder.
Ironed tie, which I didn't really think of him as a sociopath until there was a scene of him ironing his tie. Oh wow,
that explains a lot.
He's definitely gonna murder someone.
I have a very important question.
Please.
When we talked about Mindhunter last time, we were both extremely clear about the fact that his girlfriend was trash, terrible, worst piece of casting ever. No offense to that actress, but
you
totally, totally miscast. And I don't know if it was the way the character.
If you're thinking about going to law school, do it.
I don't know if it was the way the character was written.
It
whatever.
Was very odd writing. I remember.
But did they, like, officially break up at the end of last season? Because not a mention.
No, I honestly don't remember. I feel like they got rid of her in the course of the season.
Maybe.
The first season was much more focused on Holden than
his descent into madness.
Yeah. And I remember feeling like as he was, like, learning more and more about these sociopaths that he was exhibiting, like, more and more sociopathic, manipulative traits himself. That doesn't answer your question. I don't remember what happened to his girlfriend.
I was delighted not to see her this season.
I was delighted not to see her, but I remember one of the things I enjoyed about the first season was some of the truly sweaty sex scenes between there were some great sex scenes. And then this season, no sex. Not that it would have been appropriate. I can't imagine where they would have.
I thought he was going to get with the receptionist at the Hilton. So did he a minute.
I thought so too. That made me want to talk about some other misdirection, but now I don't remember where I was going. But yeah, some of the humor, the scene where Holden and Bill are driving around and they're
talking about Son of Sam.
Yes,
and how he's talking shot about how in, on the passenger side.
In a couple, when they're driving, it's always the woman in the passenger seat. And there's this slight change mm-hmm. in expression on his face as he's saying this and realizing that he's always in the passenger yeah. seat with Bill.
Yeah.
Very funny.
Yeah.
I laughed really hard at, so they run this experiment to try to figure out who could get like in the car because yeah. all these children in Atlanta are
you a cop?
Yeah. are getting drawn into some, in a car and taken to another location. And it's a harrowing cold open
oh,
where
truly terrifying.
A guy gets this kid to get into his car for $2 and you don't realize until after the extremely long title sequence
yeah.
that was a cop and he was mm-hmm. just trying to see who would get in the car. And then we see fucking Greg like mm. walk up to some kids in Maryland and be like, hey kids, who wants $10? And they're like, fuck you, cop.
If you're a cop, you have to tell us. Show us your dick. Yeah. If you're like, it was great. And then the grandma's yelling out the window at yeah. him. Yeah.
Tells him to fuck off. And I that whole, every time they showed Greg, who I don't remember from the first season.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it.
I was just like, fuck you, Greg. That's mm-hmm. like how I felt about him the whole season. And
yeah.
to see these kids actually say it just made me LOL.
Yep.
Let's talk about Greg for a second.
Let's do it.
If Wendy's character was, you know, kind of petered out and abandoned, I've thought Greg's... I wasn't sure what to make of Greg. He was like kind of green. He wasn't that great at interviewing people and tended to choke. But there was
and he had narked them out for...
Right, yeah, they all kind of hated him. Fuck you, Greg, you fucking cop. But there's a scene where he and Wendy are interviewing a character who...
The guy who...
I don't remember who that was in
He
real
was
life,
the accomplice. But... He was the kid accomplice of the Candyman.
No, the gay
character. Oh, Bateson?
Character.
The yeah, other
Bateson.
Guy? No, wasn't that the kid? Where Wendy told him the story that she
yeah,
was
yeah,
gay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'm talking about the Bateson.
Oh, okay.
Greg, like, there was something about his facial expression. Mm-hmm. They were definitely trying to tell us something. Like, I wasn't sure if he was, turned on by these, mm-hmm. like, sort of descriptions of these S&M scenarios that turned into murder. Like, there was something about Greg in that scene where mm-hmm. I was like, we are going to learn something about Greg.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was the last we saw of Greg.
Yeah, well, season. I think Greg has been a slow build, too, where
yeah.
it's always, like, he's always left out. Like, he's
yes.
included. And
oh, yeah,
then
they're always
he,
kicking him out of the room.
Yeah, and then like, when he volunteers info, like, they're all like, huh, good point. And then they're like... Okay, we'll just take that and never tell anyone yeah. Greg did it. You know, that's not explicitly said, but that's,
right.
like, he's always an after, like, he's definitely not part of the group. There's a lot within the group that they're all, like, Wendy is the psychologist and, or the scientist or whatever she is, I don't know. But, like, both Holden and Bill are dumping their personal shit on her,
mm-hmm.
and then she gets, like, tied to the office. Like, she's
yes.
shut down from doing these interviews by the director who, that guy, there's
Monster.
Something, like, menacing about that
totally.
Guy, too. He's season three is going to be about him, like, keeping her in the office so he can sexually harass her.
Yeah.
Like, she's... Yeah, I think it's all very deliberate where it's leading
yeah, so
to
Wendy's
with Wendy.
Sidelined from the work.
Mm-hmm.
She's sort of not explicitly demoted,
but she's
not
dismissed.
Employed.
Yeah, she's not.
And then her story even kind of leaves that, and we see it turn into this domestic story.
Mm-hmm.
She starts dating a woman, and their relationship is, from what I can see, completely fucking joyless. They like they have great sex once that we see, and then they kind of are. There's a tension between
mm-hmm.
them and. Yeah, it devolves into, you know, this woman doesn't, I don't know, like, there's an exchange where she doesn't want Wendy to meet her kid yet, and, like, they have this fight, and then it just kind of falls apart, and then that's the last we see of Wendy, until the last episode where I might have missed what the important cue in the scene was, but we see Wendy reading a magazine, that's the last shot of her, and I was like, is that because she's now in, like, the show's waiting room or
yeah.
something? I don't get it.
She's waiting to be sexually harassed outside
but
the
yeah,
office.
I don't know.
Of the director.
I wasn't sure if that was just sort of a thread that was not tied up or if like we were just to take something from like the downfall of Wendy and to like
Yeah, I don't know. I think
obscurity.
So Anna Torv, that actress, is amazing, and she does a really great job of being this like insanely buttoned up, again, like extremely analytical, like person who's in the closet after having been out of the closet in her previous life in Boston. And yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah,
her evolution's going to be interesting if we ever see her again.
Yeah, yeah. When in 2021, when we see season 3 of Mindhunter. Let's do a quick song, and then when we come back, yeah, I want to talk more about Wendy, and I want to talk about Bill's story, which was fucking harrowing. What am I doing here? Okay.
Bill's the real MVP.
Yeah, it was Bill really shone this season. All right, stay tuned. We will be back talking more about Mindhunter in a minute.
Children. Help! is an award-winning community radio station coming to you 24/7 from the heart of San Francisco.
I love BFF.FM because of what it represents, you know, a uniting of the local music community.
The diversity of shows is way more fun than any kind of commercial radio you might find.
Become a monthly donor and you'll be connected to a cool community of music lovers helping us build strong community radio for San Francisco. Our besties.
I get to go to these cool bestie bashes and I get to have a sweet members only pin and I get to feel like I'm contributing to the community.
Join us at bff.fm/donate.
bff.fm.
Streaming with my besties.
All right, welcome back to TV on the Radio. Once again, happy birthday, bff.fm.
Woo! Best frequencies forever.
Yes. anyway, back to murder. So I felt like if season one was about Holden sort of like mirroring the sociopaths he was studying, then season two, we saw Wendy kind of understand the way she compartmentalizes her life.
Yeah.
Is quite similar to someone who maybe leads a normal life and also kills people.
Sure, and, sure.
I mean, mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of a
true for everyone stretch. Is what you're saying, you know? Yeah.
But I mean, it was also kind of funny. We see her, she's closeted to her coworkers, but we see her suddenly leverage her personal life to try to make a connection mm-hmm. with Elmer Henley, the Candyman's yeah. accomplice. Who, you know, was deputized to commit these horrible crimes, and she saw the way that he was sort of in the thrall of someone who held power over him, and talked about how she had a relationship with her boss. And then like everyone was like, hot, that's
real smart the way cool. you made up that yeah. lie about
coming up
being
with
gay.
That lesbo mm-hmm. story, yeah. LOL. And she's like, yeah.
Yeah.
But what else was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So Bill this season experiences a horrific personal story with his son who yeah. was involved in, it's almost unspeakable, but his son witnessed a murder and was like part of this, like kind of an accidental murder. Other children murdered a toddler in his presence. It's the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it was interesting watching Bill this season, who like has to interview all these psychopaths. And in the Charles Manson interview, you know, Manson's typically kind of a kook.
But yeah. That guy.
But he kept talking about how these, you know, kids that he got to murder people were just like lost children mm-hmm. and like you could see Bill kind of losing it over that, like the idea that like any kid could sort of be turned into a murderer, it's just a matter of getting in with the wrong people.
Yep.
Yeah, that was upsetting.
Sure was.
Yeah, this is Bill, a random observation, but Holden's sunglasses this season were chef's kiss beautiful, but I have learned my lesson about Googling sunglasses in the course of a crime drama, lest I be
where you find out that they were used by the Atlanta. Jonathan Groff is, I am very, very glad that I am not a teen exposed to Jonathan Groff, because I feel like
you tell.
I'm ripe for falling like head over heels in love mm-hmm. with Jonathan Groff, definitely.
For sure.
And I'm just glad that I'm out of that phase of my life where I'm
solely
attracted to gay, unavailable men.
All right. Yeah, same. But he's very pretty.
He is very pretty. But Bill Tench is truly, like, really, really came into his own. Like, last season, they didn't develop him as, like, a I didn't feel, at least, maybe I'm just not remembering because it was 2 years ago, apparently. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel that they developed him as a very, like, good at his job guy. I had mm-hmm. the impression that it was more like he was the only guy doing this kind of cold case work. And then teaming up with this, like, hotshot yeah. intuition guy, you know? And this season, you really see him, like, he truly does know, like, what is going on with these people.
Right.
And, like, you see the real value he adds at work and, like, trying to keep all these balls in the air. And then, like, him just trying to be at home like grilling. And I thought the scene where like his wife is like, you know, I bought a six pack and you gotta mingle with these neighbors. And that, like, you really see how, like, look, fuck the police. I have no sympathy for any of them. But like the dichotomy of dealing with these people all day and then like on a Sunday having to like grill
just
with your
pretend you're a normal person.
Douchebag neighbor who's like, oh, what about like Richard Speck? What did he tell you? Yeah. Like, oh, I need more info on this, you know? And it's just like, you don't want that.
Right.
Like, you
but
don't
you also
want
see how Bill's really good at it. Like, he's good at taking on what must be traumatizing to actually learn. Or you must have to, you know.
Yeah.
Compartmentalize it's that definitely. But he can do the social thing, like he can do the storytelling. They have to go to a like party with the higher ups and like impress the people who are, I don't know, funding this project,
and he turns on his
he
like,
totally does he can do it over whiskey, he can do it at the barbecue, but like at no point do you think that he is actually like a cold-hearted person who doesn't recognize the like
that's the thing.
Human loss behind all
he
this.
And Nance, you know, like he's got like they have a tender, obviously loving relationship, and like you really see, you know, Holden's giving him shit for flying home every weekend, and you know, it's just that again, it's all about like Holden having blinders and he's focused on like the one thing he's focused on and not. And Bill Tench is like of the world, you know, like he's living a life. Yeah, he's like living a life as well as doing like all this terrible, shitty, terrible stuff.
Yeah, it was it's a very nuanced performance because also he is, you know, a square of a human. He has a military style buzz cut. Yep. He does not change the tone of his voice. He is literally my dad.
He has his voice though. I actually, that's something I noticed while watching this is I find both his voice and Jonathan Groff's voice very compelling. I find it very appealing, especially when they are talking about, and I don't know if that's like notes they got or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you, this is a complete aside. I don't know if you've seen the thing that's been doing the rounds of Holt McNally. What's the guy's name?
Oh, I forget.
The guy
who
plays Bill.
Yeah.
But he, I don't know why. I don't have any context. I saw this on Twitter, but he gives part of an interview in French and you see Jonathan Croft just staring. Like hard eyes, like emanating out of his, like just staring beseechingly, lovingly at him, and it's just it brings me great joy that these two guys like each other. It's great.
I will definitely have to watch that. Oh, that sounds delightful. I want to talk specifically about episode 7.
Yeah, let's do it.
So there are a couple episodes where the sort of through line is that Holden is getting fed up with the bureaucracy of everything. Mm-hmm. It takes, you know, approval of multiple agencies to get a flyer copied, and he just, you know, he wants to just do what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And there's, they had come up with this plan to try to smoke out the Atlanta child murderer by holding like a vigil at one of the sites where the because they presume that this guy will come out to see like the fruits of his labor, all these people mourning where he murdered a kid.
And we'll come back to revisit the site.
Right.
Sites.
And so for some reason, they need to have a big wooden cross to do this. And crosses come up throughout the season. Mm-hmm. There are several scenes that take place in church with a big cross. We meet Ed Kemper again in the prison's chapel or whatever they have in prison. There's a huge cross behind him while he's talking. So they need to get these crosses to these sites, but there's all this like red tape to order a cross from an approved vendor or whatever. There's a long scene.
Then
of
they
them
have to assemble
assembling
it
them
IKEA
from these
style.
Like IKEA instructions, and it's very odd. And then it turns into a last minute thing. So Holden is carrying this huge wooden cross, running through a procession of
Jesus
black
style.
Mourners.
Yeah,
but he's not. It's obviously Jesus imagery, which maybe is about his ego. I don't know. But he's also in a like a short sleeve white shirt and a black tie, which to me rings a little neo-Nazi-ish looking. And I just found the imagery so odd.
I just thought it was a throwback to his Book of Mormon days.
Interesting. Maybe that's what I'm thinking. Maybe I'm thinking more of like a evangelist and not a Nazi.
Yeah,
I don't know what to make of it.
I do not know why that scene was filmed Zapruder style.
Like, yes, and I wasn't sure if they had cut in like actual archival footage or just it was a style choice, but yeah, it was so weird.
It was very, very, very strange. And yeah, I'm not smart enough to know what the imagery was supposed to represent as he sprints through this procession and around this procession. Mm-hmm. Like
jumping over
he has the moment of self-awareness where he's like, I cannot run through like this throng of like black mourners, mm-hmm. you know, with this giant white cross. But then like sprinting to the church and there's like the prolonged eye contact with Camille. The organ. Yeah. And I wasn't sure what
and
to
then
make
there
of
was
it.
I mean and then there was no payoff. Like,
oh, no.
I think that was the point, like that their instincts were wrong throughout the season, but like nothing came of it. But I at least wanted them to like follow the plan through. Like we didn't see anyone looking to see if there was, you know, any suspicious looking people observing this whole thing. It just,
and that
like,
actually is
ended.
How Wayne Williams was caught at the end. Not at the end of the show, but in real life.
He, oh, really?
At one of the sites where they had put a cross,
mm-hmm.
At 2 a.m., they were staking out the site, and they heard a splash, and it was a body being dropped in the river, and his car was the first one off the bridge.
Okay.
And he said that he was visiting, like, a woman in a different county,
yeah.
and
that,
she was
that
made
is
up
how the
and the
show
whole thing.
Ends,
but
yeah.
But anyway, so I don't know what the, like, white savior imagery was in that, but it was, like, very...
It's so heavy-handed that it really bugs the shit out of me that I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either. I really don't know what to make of it. I don't, yeah.
All right,
I don't
know. If you have any other thoughts, you can tweet at us.
It was also interesting. So Jonathan Groff ended season one having a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he has panic disorder. And it's interesting, like, the show is so stylized and so visual, and there's an explicit scene with Wendy and Bill where she's like, you need to look out for like these like physiological signs, like if he's, you know, excessively sweaty. And then like in every interview in Atlanta you see him like sweating through his shirt, and I'm like, is this gonna be like a panic attack? But it turns out that he's just like dismissive of these not smart
right
prisoners who, yeah
the whole panic attack thing sort of
petered out.
As
well.
Yeah that didn't have a
he got his disorder under control,
I guess. So nothing to panic
he's
about
back.
And you're the best,
right? Expert in your field.
What else? If you could interview one serial killer dead or alive,
oh, you know what,
who would it be?
There was a time in my
you're
life
a Ted
where
Bundy
that
girl.
There was a time in my life where that held appeal, and now I'm just like, the world is dark enough. Like, I don't need...
I've probably talked to a couple serial killers in the course of an average day.
Right?
So,
I just... The world is dark enough. I don't need... Yeah. I don't... I'm not interested in that. I don't... Have you ever... I don't know how to... Not killed. Out myself as a sociopath by asking this question. I feel like everybody has gone through like a true crime is huge, as we all know, right? So like everyone is fascinated with this kind of like people who kill, like the Golden State Killer, who maintained like a life for 30 years, a shitty fucking life by all accounts, like was absolute fucking piece of trash the whole time. But like it's like very interesting. I've never really I've never been fascinated by why people kill, but I've like truly all my life really wanted to know what it'd be like to be shot.
That is not what I was expecting.
I was like, I really wonder what that feels like.
Huh.
And I think it's because it's
you could
so
do
ubiquitous.
Like a shot, getting shot simulator.
Yeah, I think
would
it's,
you do it.
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's because it's so ubiquitous on TV that...
Yeah, gun violence.
That was always... Yeah. And now in real life.
Sure.
It's totally ubiquitous. I mean, I do not in any way want to ever deal with that. But, you know, I don't know. It's only a matter of time, I guess. Everyone in America is going to get shot at some point, right?
Yeah.
If the NRA has their way. Bullet for every person.
At least. Yeah, I can't say that I've wondered that.
No.
I very much want not to get shot.
Am I a sociopath? I do too,
no, I
but I'm just extraordinarily curious about the actual like Did you ever read the New Yorker did an article about the effect of bullets on bodies?
Was it like about the AK-47 style assault?
Yeah, rifles? And like the damage it does to like just.
Yeah, I think I did read.
Yeah,
that. How much worse?
Truly
it is
harrowing. Like, yeah, than
old timey guns.
Okay. Anyway, we are off on a tangent here, but as experts in our field, I feel uniquely qualified to talk about that. Who for you would you? John Wayne Gacy? Is that
maybe John Wayne Gacy? Who was that California guy who was really hot? Richard Ramirez.
Ted Bundy? Oh yeah, that's right in your wheelhouse. But I don't know that a lot of other people thought he was super. Everybody else did think he was really hot. Actually,
he had fucked up teeth, so. Kind of that it detracts from your whole look.
Yeah,
fucked up teeth.
That's his biggest problem.
yeah, no, of course it is. I think he had like a meth problem. So,
yeah. I don't know. True crime has lost some of its appeal for me, given these dark times.
I think that's true of a lot of things. Like a lot of subject matter. I feel like I could have watched it. A few years, like if it doesn't feel far enough removed,
yeah, that's why Succession works watchable. For me, because exactly. I, despite it being my fondest desire for my non-existent multiple children to fight for my money and attention, like, and my greatest wish that I didn't know I had was to have a fleet of black helicopters flying over Manhattan. So that I can watch, and I can watch like heart feely programs, because I like to see people try to have a connection in this ever increasingly disconnected world. But yeah, I just am like, let me just go back to Fleabag forever, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I find it increasingly hard to be drawn into dark psychodrama stuff.
Yeah, same. All right, well, I'll leave you guys with this
not saying your mileage song. May vary. Everybody loves season two of Mindhunter, and it was definitely good.
I really enjoyed it. But yeah, I think just dark subject matter in general, as the world feels like the lights are going out, I am increasingly drawn to, maybe I'll rewatch Heart of Dixie from the beginning. You know?
Absolutely.
That sort of thing.
Absolutely. I'm going to Mindy Project it up again soon.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. I recommend Mindhunter. I think it's... I think it's really interesting.
I recommend it with reservations.
The average price for dinner without drinks is $50. All right, well, stay
Pinot
tuned.
Pinot Grigio is a perfect accompaniment.
Oh, man, I could bang out some episodes of Check Please this afternoon. Maybe that's what I'll do. Okay, stay tuned to BFF All Day in celebration of 6 years of independent, community-supported radio. Indie Rock Girl Radio is up next, and we will be back next week with 3 new restaurants. And TV on the radio.
I'm Leslie Sabracco. Right. Thanks for watching.
Enjoy your Sunday. In someone's eyes, oh,